You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 8th of May, 2017, on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Midori House, coming to you live from Studio One here in London. I'm Andrew Tuck. Yesterday, French voters elected a new leader with a bold vision for their country's future. On today's show, we'll unpick that vision and the challenges Emmanuel Macron will face in the Élysée Palace. Can his fledgling party achieve anything that he's promised? What will it mean for France's place in Europe and the rest of the world? And perhaps most importantly of all, can he heal a deeply divided electorate?
Je veux enfin avoir un mot.
I want to say a word for those who voted today for Madame Le Pen. No, don't boo. I respect them. But I will do everything during the 5 years to come to make sure there is no reason at all to vote for extremes.
Aucune raison de voter pour les extrêmes.
Well, that's all to come in the next half hour here on Midori House with me, Andrew Tuck. So welcome to a special edition of Midori House, focused on the French presidential election results and what's next for Macron. My guests today are Marie Billon, who's the UK correspondent for multiple French media outlets, and Quentin Peel, associate fellow at Chatham House and former Berlin bureau chief for the FT. Welcome both to the programme. We're going to start with initial reactions to yesterday. Marie, when you saw the results coming through, we'd had pretty good polling before the kind of the period of Perda, and then afterwards, the snap polls that were given straight afterwards, they gave it to Macron. But was there a sense of relief, you know, for people who didn't want to see a far right leader come in? What was your immediate takeaway?
Well, I was at the pub where the Macron supporter of London was yesterday gathered to wait for the results. And I talked to a few people afterwards and they all said they were happy, but also relieved. All of them said the same thing. They knew he would win because all the polls would say it was saying that he would win. But still, there was something like Trump Brexit, maybe it would happen. So relief was really the main sentiment yesterday. And of course, the numbers, quite important. Yesterday, we knew it was more than 60%, and we were afraid that somehow she would go up to 40%, Marine Le Pen. And if the Front National did more than 40%, whatever the abstention was, it would have been very telling in a way. So the fact that we knew that he won and she didn't do that good score was something that was more than a relief. It meant that somehow perhaps Emmanuel Macron could work the France that he's heading today. There was a sentiment yesterday, at least for the supporters.
And Quentin, for you, the same question, the immediate feeling on seeing those election results come in. Yeah, we've been in this studio post-Trump, post-Brexit, where we were pretty confident what the vote was going to be, and it went against the perceived voting patterns. What did you think when you saw the results come in?
Well, I confess that I was watching the turnout very closely and worried that there would be a very significant extension. When I saw that the turnout was about 65% by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I thought, that's okay. I think that's going to be okay. There really isn't any way he's going to lose. But I tell you, the other thing I really thought was watching the demonstration of the crowds round the Louvre when it was clear that Macron had won. And I actually felt, I confess, just an enormous sense of joy. I wished I was there. This was a young crowd, overwhelmingly young people, and they were in such a good mood and they were so happy. And I thought, what a contrast to the celebrations that greeted the British vote for Brexit, which was overwhelmingly old people like me.
Marie, he comes across as youthful. You know, he embraced the EU in his moment of victory. He was standing there with the European flag. He's obviously somebody who wants to bring reform still to France. Is he going to be able to get his way? He seems to have a lot of ambition, but the next bit is winning some MPs to see him through with all of his ambitions.
Yes, indeed. It's his next fight, and we don't know how it's going to go down, because, of course, there again, En Marche never existed before, and the way people vote for the local election for their MPs is very different than they do for the presidential election. They feel less entitled... they feel that less have to do a choice, to make a choice for the country. It's more for themselves. So will they want to give a majority to Emmanuel Macron, meaning that they would perhaps think about the candidate of En Marche, whereas normally they would have voted for this person more than this party? Maybe, because there's a new energy to politics, so maybe they would change the way they cast their vote for the local election this time. But it's going to be quite complicated, because what he wants to do, Emmanuel Macron, is he wants to bring out new people. And of course, new people have to, well, if you want to be elected, you have to be a little known, at least, by people who would cast their vote for you. So what does that mean? Will he, I don't know, take the local doctor of a small circumscription because he's known by everyone? But in this case, there won't be any competence that he would give to the politician scene. So it's going to be very interesting to see what kind of casting he does for his candidate for MP.
What do we think, Quentin, about Marine Le Pen's supporters? You know, we say, you know, she lost, and she resoundingly lost, but she did take still 11 million voters. Do you think those voters will remain outside the system, will remain waiting for another opportunity to attack Macron? Or do you think there is a chance that he can bring them back into the fold? Because what's interesting here in the UK, we saw a large number of people voting for UKIP, the equivalent almost of Marine Le Pen's party here in the UK. But we're seeing now in the run-up to a general election, their vote has absolutely disappeared. It's down to, predictions are like maybe as low as 2%, which shows that if you address the concerns of those constituencies, it is possible to bring those people back on board. So how dangerous do you think that constituency is of 11 million? Or do you think that actually, if he's skillful, Macron can bring those people back into a more broader political fold?
Well, I don't think he'll get them all back. But I think the quote you had at the beginning of the programme shows that he's very conscious of the challenge there and the division of the country. Because it's fascinating too, isn't it? Because it's also such a regional division that you had very much the cities and the west of the country going for Macron, and the north and the south, particularly, okay, rather like in Britain, sort of former industrial areas where people are feeling left behind, as they say, going for Le Pen. Now, he's got to address that feeling of people being left out, left behind. It's a huge challenge for him, because, as we've all said, yes, he's the outsider, but he's also the insider. He is seen as being rather the golden boy, and he's got to get on top of that. So that means creating a stable political basis with a very new party. A lot of people are going to have their knives out for him. I mean, they're going to rather resent his being there. But do we believe in the ultimate good sense of the French voter, who says, well, having given a very large majority to a president, what I'm not going to do is turn around and then screw him on the parliament that he gets and make sure he doesn't have a majority. I don't know. I'm not sure that voters are really that logical. So he's got a real battle. I think he knows he's got that battle, which is very important. And I think that French politics clearly is desperately in need of a remaking, of a, somebody said earlier today, both modernisation and moralisation. The two things that need to be done.
I think there's something as well that's important that doesn't have anything to do with the next election, is that people are already in the street today to say that Macron is not my president, he's not legitimate. That's absolutely significant. That means that people, having just elected a president, most of them having abstained yesterday, are already saying, you're not my president, whatever you do. They already say, dégage, go away. They used to say that for Hollande, they're now saying that for Macron. He hasn't done anything, he's not effectively president yet. So that means that there's a lot of people, younger people in particular, who were for Mélenchon and for Le Pen and Dupont-Aignan, who doesn't want to give him a chance. And there's this lack of respect for the function of president that really started when Nicolas Sarkozy was elected. There was a big demonstration just the evening when he was elected. But I think it started in 2002 when Chirac was against Le Pen and people were told, you have to vote Chirac, and they were left with someone they didn't really want. And they decided, well, we'll never get what we want. We have to basically politicians are all the same. We have to safeguard the Republic. But a way to safeguard the Republic is not by electing Chirac or Emmanuel Macron. It's by taking the street in the old ways. But that does mean that, in a way, Emmanuel Macron is screwed for the beginning for them.
But can I just pick up with you this point that I was testing Quentin on, is what I find interesting is, you know, that here we have a party that was only begun just over a year ago, has managed to sweep to power. That's a constituency of people who have been very happy to kind of give up their traditional voting party. With Marine Le Pen, we see many people who seem to have flocked to her, but we have a feeling that they could go back to the more traditional right-wing parties if they had a leader that answered to them. I wonder if the takeaway from this is that actually people are just not that affiliated with parties in that die-hard way that they used to be. And you have much more a shoal of fish mentality, not in a bad way, but people will just move to where they feel the feeding ground is better. Mm-hmm. And it is with Macron at the moment. Therefore, all the parties going forward, if that's the case, there's less and less for them to rely on as leaders.
Well, that's quite true. I mean, for example, you see in the UK, the Labour Party and the Conservative Party have had this name with a few tweaks here and there for a long time. That's the same for the Socialist Party. Les Républicains never had a problem with changing their name 3 times in the last 10 years. That does mean that change is not really a problem, that people are not attached to at least this centre-right party too much, because it would be impossible. They might be thinking about it. They might be thinking about changing the name of the Socialist Party because it's in real disarray at the moment. But they will shoot themselves in the foot, because there's something glorious about the name and about the party, the Socialist Party, in a way, still, I think, within people's mind. It's not the same for all the other parties, the Modem, Les Républicains, who used to be the UMP, who used to be another name before that, and used to be another name before that. So that means that people are happy to go to one party to the other, but parties are exactly the same in France. They are willing to basically go where the waters is warmer.
But aren't we seeing a remaking of the political spectrum? As has been said, instead of left versus right, the old tradition, are we not seeing a remaking along, if you like, open versus closed? The open part of society who is more positive about immigration, who's more positive about globalization, against those who really are feeling very threatened by both those things, who want to close the doors, who want to put up the barriers. And that in a way we're seeing in France, on both the extreme right, but also on the far left, the closed view, and in the centre, the open view, which in this case has come through with a majority. But in both Britain and maybe in the US as well, we saw that the open view actually lost.
Yeah, and I wondered about that. When you see where people voted and who they voted for, in the north of France and in the south of France, you're not French, but you reside in a part of the south of France. There you see very strong support for Le Pen. Now, it's great that he has won, but he does have to engage with the conversation in those areas. And part of that conversation is around migration. He certainly did not campaign on an anti-immigration ticket. He's been quite robust in defence of integration and doing more. But do you think, Marie, in an end, he will have to have some conversation about how migration is at least perceived if he's going to be a president for all of France?
Oh, that's an issue that's going to be debated, that's for sure. Not on the line that the Front National would like to talk about, not saying immigrants are those who bring terrorism and unemployment in France. That's absolutely not the way he's going to do it. But he's going to have to talk about immigration. Yes, I'm curious to see if he's going to do a ministry for immigration, as Sarkozy did. I don't know how he's going to play it. But yes, if he starts to ignore some important issues for the French people in the pretext that it looks a bit to Front National or something like that is going to fail. And I don't think it's his personality. I think he's going to try and basically take the bull by the horn. The way he's going to tackle that, I think he's going to say first, immigration is good for to open France. I mean, before opening France, you have to have people who come into France to basically spread the message in a way. And he's going to try and turn it into a more positive light. He's already started to try and put it in a more positive light. The fact that he's pro-European, for example, is a proof of that. Whether this message can really go through to most of the people in France and La France qui va mal, those who voted against Marine Le Pen, the France who don't feel good, who feel left behind, can they really hear this message? We'll see about that. Maybe I haven't given up in a way, because people are very frustrated. But if someone really manages to bring something positive, I don't think they will just shut themselves into the negativity. I know that's what we think French people are. They just want to stay in their negativity and all that. But I'm not sure that's the case. And I think there's some hope. I don't know if Quentin is okay with me, but
well, that was the point I was making about just how happy that crowd was that was cheering the victory of Macron, a totally racially mixed crowd too, and that was a very positive message that was coming across. Now, is this 25% of the population which Macron won in the first round? Or, you know, how big is it and how big is the backlash? Because, Andrew, as you said earlier on, what happened in Britain, UKIP's vote has collapsed. Why? Because UKIP's clothes have been taken by the Conservative Party, i.e. the anti-immigration clothes and the anti-Europe clothes. So it's not as if, in a way, the narrative has been changed. It's just been rather cleverly seized by one of the old parties.
We're going to move on to the broader topic of Europe. Quentin, I just wanted to ask you a rejoinder to something I was asking Marie about. For Marine Le Pen, you know, we've just been made clear by Marie, a French party loves a bit of a rebrand. She's already said today, oh, it's a bit of a name change, a bit of, you know, window dressing will change how we're perceived. She seems determined to become, you know, the party on the right, you know, that everybody turns to. And we have to be careful not to just lump everybody in who voted for her party as being, you know, some kind of fascist. There are many people who voted, as you said, out of legitimate concerns. Does she stand a chance with this simple exercise of rebranding, or do you think that's a bit desperate?
I think it is a bit desperate, really. I would see, you know, you've got to look at the first round of these elections to see, in a way, the core support. And her core support is round there about 22, 23%. And there is now going to be a huge battle, I think, as she tries to rebrand herself not as an anti-Semitic racist party, for the right of French politics. That battle we're going to see really joined, I think, in June. I don't think rebranding is going to get her there.
Well, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, we're going to talk about this in the wider context of Europe and what it means for all the neighbouring countries and beyond.
How do you take on Donald Trump? In the May issue of Monocle, we head to California, the base of the resistance, to meet the politicians fighting the good fight. We're also in Mongolia for a sit-down with the foreign minister ahead of their elections. We're in Tokyo to take a look inside Uniqlo's new headquarters, Bangkok for its bookstores, Seoul for its fashion, and just south of Melbourne to visit Australia's best designed hotel. It's our design and property special this month, so we'll bring you a heritage revival in Barcelona, meet some game-changing developers in Warsaw, Oslo and Kuala Lumpur, and we'll tell you which three small but brilliant firms you should commission for your next project. There's lots more, of course, from business to culture, entertaining to fashion. All inside the May issue of Monocle, out on newsstands and on monocle.com now.
Welcome back to Midori House. I must tell you, it's been hard to stop the debate going on during that short break. And still with me are the journalist Marie Billon and Quentin Peel from Chatham House. Let's turn now to France's place in Europe and how last night's win for Macron might influence that relationship. Marie, does this mean that the range of populist movements we've seen around Europe are suddenly checked in a very meaningful way? Because we've had an election in the Netherlands where the far right did not win. We had the same in Austria where the same did not come to pass, even though many were fearful. And here again, even just, I think, especially post-Trump's election, there was a feeling that France could, in fact, elect Marine Le Pen. If we hadn't seen the rise of En Marche, then it could have been more likely. But do you think this is a change in direction for Europe?
I think it's good news all around what happened in Europe and what happened in France yesterday. I'm not so sure we've seen the end of the populism rise, because now the mainstream party are talking a bit like the extreme party. I mean, we saw that, we've been seeing that for some time. I mean, Nicolas Sarkozy took a few, lots of ideas from the Front National, dialed them down a bit, but in a way, immigration, this kind of thing, he knew he had to go on the Front National issues to be elected. It didn't work for him because he wasn't re-elected, but there's still this wish to try and cross over, taking the bits that would make them, that would make people elected, but not to go too far as being a branded extremist. And today we have very concerning, I think, message from parties, even in Britain. For example, when Theresa May is saying, oh, Europeans, some people in Brussels want to interfere into our election, she's pitting countries against each other. And that's exactly what extremists in, I mean, 60, 80 years ago were doing, saying we are enemies. They are enemies over there across this border. And that's, I do think that's very dangerous, this stance that mainstream party are starting to take. François Fillon was bordering with that. He wasn't elected, but he was from the center-right. And I do think Theresa May is very much touching those lines.
I want to do something interesting at the moment, but first, one more question for you, Quentin. I just wanted to say, you know, is the danger here that actually we think it has turned a corner and everybody goes back to, oh, we don't have to worry about it all, it's all a bit complacent now, and that, you know, there's not one reform of Europe, and there's two, not a feeling that you need to address the needs of the disaffected, the people who don't find a political party to follow?
I think that's a huge danger. And I think, actually, I think because it's such a big danger, I don't think it is going to happen. But what we've seen as the most immediate, I would say, cause of this populist backlash is, it was the crash of 2007-2008, the financial crash, whose causes were never really resolved. And the people who got screwed by it were the smaller people and the middle classes. And the people who weren't screwed by it were the rich bankers and so on, and indeed what was perceived as the political class. And so I think that there is a fundamental problem that's not been resolved. And it's more than that, because also it's not just that, if you like, the financial world producing ridiculous levels of salaries and bonuses and everything else has got very greedy and has ripped people off. But I think the other thing that's caused huge insecurity is the incredibly fast progress of technology and technological change, and that people are left behind by that. They no longer understand how to engage with the world around them. And those two huge challenges, really, along with, I suppose, globalization, the fact that, you know, China's the rising power and Europe's declining, have got to be dealt with. It's a huge amount of insecurity people are dealing with, and they're looking for simple answers to that question, which is go for people who just say it's all black and white, keep the foreigners out. And that's not an answer, but the real answers are much more difficult.
Well, let's play a new parlor game that I've just invented off the top of my head. Let's play friend or foe. For Berlin, Quentin, friend or foe? With Macron.
For Macron.
With Macron there, how important is that friendship? How easy is that going to be now with a Merkel-Macron alliance?
I think that will be good. I think the Germans will be hugely relieved that he's been elected. It would have been the biggest disaster for German policy, domestic or foreign, to have had Le Pen elected. So Merkel will bend over backwards. But it's going to be a very interesting challenge, because there is still a deep ideological divide between Germany and France on things like the euro, which is unreconciled.
Okay, Marie, your turn. Friend or foe, Mr. Trump? Don't laugh. This is all serious
stuff.
Yeah,
this is very interesting. And I don't know. I don't know, really. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how the very stern new president is going to meet the very manipulative and showy president of the United States.
I think you're giving the answer here. I don't think that sounds like friendship to me.
Well, I mean, it's not about persons. It's about people who are representing the state. I mean, at least for Emmanuel Macron. So even if he doesn't like Trump, we won't know. If Trump doesn't like Emmanuel Macron, we might know.
Okay, you can have 1 point each for that. Quentin, Theresa May, Brexit, friend or foe?
She's got a real problem, I think, because on the one hand, Le Pen would have been even more of a nightmare for her than Macron. But Macron is not going to be easy because he's a very committed pro. He thinks Europe provides the answers, not the problem. And he sees Brexit, the whole process, as being very damaging to Europe. So he's not going to bend over backwards to do nice deals for Theresa May. So it's going to be not friend or foe, but a very difficult neighbour.
Marie, friend or foe again. This is the trickier one. Brussels fat cats.
Well, no. Well, this one.
Or Brussels fat shats, don't they say? Or
you mean Europe? All the representative of Europe.
Yeah.
You mean? Well, no. I think it's going to go
down.
No,
but
well,
if you're sitting in Brussels and you've had a nice. If you're Mr. Juncker,
yes.
Is he kind of, you know? Is he having an even bigger whiskey tonight and with his cigarette dancing around his office?
I would protest, Mr. Juncker's a bit of a thin cat, actually.
But do you think for the, you know. Yeah, the Brussels bureaucracy, they're all kind of, oh, let's go out and have some mules tonight because this is like, we've got a goal here.
In a way, yes, because Macron is very much pro-European. The problem they might have with him is that, in a way, and I use this word with caution, he's a bit of an idealist. He believes, I think, in the Europe where the way was constructed as something higher than politics. He will deal with the politics and with the nitty-gritty of what Europe has to do. But he's got a vision for Europe, and somehow we have the impression that with all they have to do with Britain and the rest, they might not really have the time to talk about the philosophical mission of Europe anymore. So it might be a bit of a, you know, young ball still with dreams, and the older man say, oh, we don't have time for that. We just have to get on with the work.
Well, you've had the trickier questions, but pretty good. I think next one, Moscow, Quentin, friend or foe?
I think fairly much of a foe, very difficult to deal with. The interesting thing about Macron was, unlike both Le Pen and François Fillon, he didn't have any particular sympathy for Russia and the Russians. He didn't campaign in any way on a sort of, we must make nice with Mr. Putin. And I think, therefore, that relationship is going to go on being really very difficult.
And Canada, Pierre Trudeau, who do you think is going to think they're the best looking of the bunch?
Ah, well, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out if there was a magazine in France which is called Garçon. I think it's a gay magazine, but I'm not sure. I think it is. And I think they photoshopped the head of Emmanuel Macron on a very bodybuilded body, unless it was Emmanuel Macron's. I'm not sure. I mean, I think it was on his body. So I guess Justin Trudeau has the edge over there. But in terms of their politics and the way of seeing the world and this kind of thing, I mean, Justin Trudeau already sent a very nice tweet to Emmanuel Macron. I think it's going to go down quite well, as long as they don't try to wrestle.
Yeah. I would think at the G20 there's going to be a bit of a fight for Angela Merkel's arm this time, isn't there? She's going to come down one of those like ballroom steps with like one gentleman on each arm. Quentin,
that's a bit sexist, isn't it?
You're allowed to do it when it's about men. Quentin, when we look at what happens next, the next stages for Macron, what are the important hurdles in the days and weeks ahead?
Well, he's got to win a majority of some sort in the Chambre des députés in the Parliament, because if he doesn't have a clear majority, he won't be able to put his programme through. He's got a problem because the Républicains, the centre-right, are really determined to have revenge for the fact that they screwed up. So that's the first thing. The second thing is he's got to get on quickly with this reform programme. He's been elected on a reform programme, unlike Sarkozy, unlike Hollande, who never really put reform on the agenda till they got to power. So he's got that mandate, but he's got to get on with it.
Anne-Marie, for you, what do you see as the key hurdles for him?
I think it's going to be the labor law, really. It's going to be he wants to make France more competitive again. He wants to.
And this has tripped up every president so far who's attempted anything, you know, to really, yeah. really change the legislation.
And even himself, when he was a Secretary of State for economy, yes, indeed, yes. And so, yeah, that's going to be a bit complicated, but that's going to be his priority. He's been elected on that, and he's hated for that already.
Well, that's Finney for today anyway. But thank you to both of you, both good players of friend and foe. I'm going to give them equal marks, don't know about you. But that's all we have time for on today's show. So thank you to Marie Bion and also to Quentin Peel. The show was produced by Bill Luti. It was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco and also by Hunter Charlton. And there's going to be more news at 2200 hours. But from me, Andrew Tuck, thank you and goodbye.